Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast, Hot Takes Edition.
Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Wait, is this thing on? Oh, do I have to record one of these? Well, welcome back, everybody. This is the Hot Takes edition of the Unconquered Podcast. Immediately following Florida State's 30-7 loss at Syracuse. And to be quite honest, there's not a whole lot to say about this one. At some point, it used to crack me up at times when, in a halftime interview or whatnot, Coach Bowden would be asked, you know, what do you guys need to do better? Or what did you think out there? And he'd say, well, you know, we need to just, you know, block and tackle better. And, you know, you'd think, oh yeah, you know, he's just kind of fooling around and, you know, jerking the chain of the interviewer doesn't want to say a whole lot. But at a certain point, you just need to block and tackle better. And this team has some serious, serious flaws, particularly on the blocking part of that. The first week against Virginia Tech, the offensive line was generally okay. You know, they didn't play well. They had too many missed assignments, too many guys turned loose. But, you know, they didn't get manhandled physically across the board. For the most part, they held their own when they were on the right block. Similar thing against Samford. Things went backwards a little bit as they had more injuries and some more of the backups got in and did their thing. And then there was today against Syracuse. And this was basically offensive line Armageddon. I've often been one who at different points has pointed out that, well, you know, the offensive line, you know, they didn't play as badly as, you know, as the optics. You know, everybody likes to blame the offensive line. It's convenient because you see a quarterback getting hit or whatever. And that one's on the quarterback, or, you know, receiver was late in terms of getting into his route or whatever. Today, listen, if you wanted to put together a teaching tape of how not to play offensive tackle, you would be hard-pressed to find a better example from a Power 5 game than what you just saw from the two bookends on the field at pretty much any point from Florida State today. Those two tackles got their butts kicked, basically play in, play out, by a pair of Syracuse defensive ends that's really not special. Boy, they made them look like all pros, though. They made them look like they should be going in the, you know, top 10 of the NFL draft, which makes you wonder what's going to happen if you're looking at the same guys, and it may end up happening given the injury situation, looking at the same guys out there against a pair of guys at Clemson that very well could be top 10, 15, 20 draft picks. Whew. That's not promising for the future. That's not promising for where things project from here. And quite frankly, given what Taggart wants to do, how he wants to go about things, you can't run that offense, or pretty close to any offense, with what you just saw today against Syracuse up front. Because you can't run the ball when you're whiffing on both ends. Not only can you not block their ends, but then you're also turning some guys loose on the interior. The only guy who played well today at all on the offensive line was Eberle, at least on the first watch. And man, the tackles were bad. The left tackle in particular. The left tackle, Jawan Williams, was awful. And then Abdul Bello came in and said, "Hold my beer." Yeah, and you know, Brady Scott is not real good at left tackle, but he might right now be the best option they got. There's not a whole lot to say there. You know, again, I'm typically one who, as often as not, is saying, you know, be a little bit more moderate on, you know, you got to understand what they're trying to do up front. It didn't look as bad. No, this was every bit as bad as it looked on the offensive line. And the thing is, it doesn't matter how many five stars you have elsewhere if you can't block at all up front. So that's number one. And until they get Landon Dickerson back at left or at right tackle, and he hasn't been able to stay healthy for more than half of the time that he's been in Tallahassee. So even if he does get back, how much longer before he gets hurt again? So even if you do get that, then what? Until they get Dickerson back at right tackle, they're not going to get better there. And left tackle, I'm really not sure what options they have. With Josh Ball off campus now because of the because of being dismissed from the team, with him being gone, they don't have another guy. And you know, there are people out there who are saying, well, what about the freshman? The thing is, if the freshman, I can tell you this, if the freshman could be anywhere near as good as these guys at this stage, they'd probably be playing. Which tells you, it, as bad as it was, it could be worse. Now, given what I just saw, I do think they're going to have to give a long, hard look to say, to Neal on the to Evan Neal on the at the tackle spot. I mean, is he going to be that much worse than what you had at left tackle? If you feel like you can play him without ruining him at this stage, maybe you give him a look. Maybe. But the problem is, if you play a freshman way before he's ready, you can ruin him. So then not only are you not better right now, you're screwing yourself and him for the future. So that's the dilemma that you're in. And Goss is just not heavy enough. You know, you're not going to play a 265, 270-pound offensive tackle against Clemson. That's just not a good idea. And again, you still have to deal with these guys learning their assignments and all this. And these are guys that are screwing it up right now are guys that were there for spring. Although, again, Juwan Williams wasn't on the field for pretty much any of spring. You know, guys have been in and out because of injury. I mean, they've been a MASH unit for a couple of years now, partly because of some issues in strength and conditioning previously. But man, you know, you can't do much. You cannot do much in terms of that, in terms of the offensive line. You can't win when you look like that up front. Again, as Coach Bowden used to say all the time, you know, the game, as often as not, just comes down to blocking and tackling them better than they do to you. Well, you know, there's that. And, you know, I've been texting back and forth with former players, with, you know, people who have coaching experience and so on. And some of us are just, it's like, well, you know, there's just not much you can do at this stage with what you got. One of the hard parts here is it's really hard to assess blame. You know, how much of this is on the current coaching staff for not getting it better? It's hard to assess that because of how much is clearly the result of not having things where they should be in terms of what the old staff left on campus. I mean, there's only so much you can polish that turd. So how much is on the new staff versus the old staff? Well, a lot. The personnel situation, the situation on the offensive line where you just don't have players that are up to caliber, that's on the old staff. The situation where you have guys, a large number of upperclassmen on this team who simply are lazy, more interested in doing whatever they want to do, looking good, being Florida State players, but not really putting in the work and buying in to do the things that they need to do to be successful. The problem, those problems, you blame on the general cultural problems that were left by the last staff. And, you know, I was told by someone in the program who would know very, very well at this stage in the spring, I was told that, you know, they felt that they had a lot of talent on the roster, that there were a lot of guys that, I mean, man, these guys are flat out super talented. But, and actually, you know, we're not far off in terms of a lot of the, in terms of the general amount of talent on the roster to what teams like Clemson have. But this person told me we're a good 2 years away from Clemson or any team like that culturally. And it's going to take us a couple solid years to rebuild that, to get to where culturally we're in that place. And I listened to that. I heard it. I didn't ignore it. I agreed. Still agree. Maybe a little further than 2 years. I don't know. But what I didn't appreciate was how, what that might look like between now and 2 years from now, and exactly how deep things might have to crater before that culture gets fixed, and exactly how broken that culture would continue to be even through all the work that Taggart and company did this offseason. Because when you look at different places on the field, they're... It's obvious in some cases that guys are just not doing what they're coached to do. You got a guy that's just doing his own thing. And when you see that, that goes back to culture. And when the culture is this broken, at some point, there's the old saying, you have to either manage up or manage out. And they did their best in this offseason to manage a lot of these guys up, to improve them. But some of these guys are going to have to be managed out now, because now they're proving to you that they're not going to do what you're asking them to do, that they're not going to buy into a culture change. They're going to continue to point the finger at other people. They're not going to put the work in to do that. And that's become more obvious in practice the last couple of weeks, with particularly those upperclassmen. And you're going to continue to see more and more of a youth movement as these coaches are going to basically say, okay, fine. If we're going to lose, we're going to lose with young guys who are going to play and buy into what we want to do, and we're going to be really good in 2 years. You're going to see more of that, because they're not going to put up with this from legacy guys who really, you know, they're going to do their own thing. Now, which guys wind up getting managed out, you know, which guy, we may see a decent exodus after this season, but which guys end up getting managed out, it's going to be interesting. But going through here, you know, I got a lot of questions on what can you do offensively to improve what, I mean, this looks so terrible. There's not a whole lot that you can do when you can't block, but there are a few things you can try to do to mask the problems up front. Number one, I do think that they haven't done their personnel and their limitations a whole lot of favors in not throwing it, working more quick game on first down. And they did start doing that in the second half. You started seeing the short side hitches to Gavin in particular on first down. And quite frankly, if you can't block, if you can't pass protect, if you can't run block well enough to get more than 3 yards on first down, the one thing you have to do is just do anything it takes to try to avoid bad leverage. Because if this team is in second and third and long, it's over. They can't pass protect. So what do you have to do? You have to start throwing off schedule. You have to basically, or put it another way, you have to throw when you have leverage. Neutral downs, you throw the ball more. I know that's not Willie Taggart's style. I know that's not what he wants to build toward. But at a certain point, you have to throw it more on first down, just to throw at the times when you actually might have a chance of protecting, and just to keep the defensive line more honest. Because when you're throwing on long yardage, it's over. And that means you have to flip it around. And when you're going to run, you're going to run on long yardage. So first and 10, throw it. Second and 10, after an incompletion, you better run it. Because it's going to be third and 17 if you try to throw it. Third and 6, run it. Because you can't protect. Maybe third and six. It's a neutral down. I guess you can get that ball off. But overall, you're gonna have to run more quick game stuff, more of that short to intermediate possession passing stuff, just to take pressure off your offensive line. That's a lot of stuff that Fisher did last year to try to protect those problems up front. But this is actually worse than it was last year up front. Last year with Rick Leonard, who actually is playing in the NFL now, with some of those guys that they had on top of this group, they were a little bit better. This is even worse. And so you need to protect your quarterback paradoxically by throwing more on neutral downs. And then that means you have to, when you do run, you're going to have to run more on longer yardage downs when you don't have leverage, and try to work your way in. And you have to, even when the numbers aren't perfect for it, sometimes you're going to have to take those wide receiver screens and try to make some big plays in space out there. You have to move the quarterback a little bit and do a little bit more half field stuff, which again, that's not what you want to be doing in this scheme. But in terms of being flexible and finding ways that can work a little bit, you know, you have to move the pocket a little bit, you know, chip with the back so that you can read half the field and have your quarterback, you know, do one of those, you know, do triangle reads, level reads, these sorts of things on a half field read, moving so that he's getting away from pressure on the side that you can't block, which you really can't block on either side, but at least you can chip or help on the one side that you're booting to. And basically it's a read, throw it away or run situation for the quarterback. That's the only stuff you really can do. Other than that, and I'm sure that they'll start playing a little bit more with that stuff, but other than that, you know, there's just not a whole lot left when you can't block. You have to get the ball out of it. Whatever you're going to do, you're going to have to get the ball out of your quarterback's hands really quickly. Whew. Now, on the flip side, I will say the defense played pretty well. Not great, but, you know, giving up 30 to Syracuse, given the turd that the offense put up, is, you know, that's not terrible. Syracuse can play offense. Now, it is concerning when your middle linebacker gets run over, gets trucked by an opposing wide receiver. And one thing that is very evident again about this team is the general how soft this team plays, and how often they're going backwards when they make tackles. The few exceptions of that are guys like Jaden Woodby, who haven't been there. Woodby doesn't go backwards a whole lot, but by and large, this team's going backwards when they're making tackles. Defensive tackles played well. Ends were okay. Linebackers, not very good, with the exception of Woodby. Now, I will say Jackson had some good plays on short yardage, but when it wasn't short yardage, he wasn't that great. And unfortunately, what he did in short yardage only served to demonstrate exactly how low his effort level is at times, and how low his focus in terms of keeping his technique and breaking down his frame and properly doing things the way that he's supposed to in the hole, triggering correctly, doing the attention to detail was not there when it wasn't backs to the wall, you know, third and goal from the one situation. You need that level of effort, that level of attention to detail on the other downs too. And there's too much of that from this Florida State team. It's like, oh, well, you know, now we'll try, because, you know, we got to do something now. Too late, man. You should have been putting that work in. You should have been putting that attention to detail in all week, all camp, all summer. You should actually be trying to really focus on doing it right every time, instead of, well, you know, got to flip the switch. So, you know, this is a broken culture. This is a situation where, I mean, listen, if they play like this next week, they'll lose to Northern Illinois at home. I mean, just when I thought, given how things had opened up, just when I thought maybe Florida State had hit bottom and was ready to move up. And again, I said in the preview, I had no idea what to expect, because preparation had been eh. But Syracuse was a situation where they could potentially do well. Wasn't sure what to expect. Had no idea. I said, I won't be surprised if Florida State loses. I won't be surprised if they win by a decent amount. Who knows? I have no idea what to expect with this team. Well, now we know. Now, three games in, you are what you... This team kind of is what they are. Now we kind of know what they are. With this, you know, new staff, everything else, you know, regardless, this is the same team that had to reschedule a game so that they could go 6-6 last year. And this year, 6-6 is going to be, you know, now you can go ahead and adjust your win total expectation down. Losing to Syracuse here, you know, that I was saying before the season, 9-3, 8-4, depending on what happens against against Virginia Tech, probably is your area, but 8-4, probably a decent expectation. 9-3 if they beat Virginia Tech. Okay, fine. I didn't think that that was worth changing after the first two games. Well, now that they've lost to Syracuse, that was going to be that really was one of the eight that you're expecting in the 8-4. So now 7-5 is probably your best case scenario. 6-6, maybe that's probably a good result. 5-7, very realistic. 4-8, yep, still on the table. Unless some things really change, and unless they get some help, get healthy at a couple spots, you know, they got to get Dickerson back. Unless they find some solutions that are going to work a little better in some places that just haven't emerged so far, and unless some guys emerge, or unless some young guys come in and just start playing lights out, you're going to have to deal with more of this. And again, this is where if you're the new coaching staff, you start to recognize what you got, and you start to cut bait in terms of some of the older guys that, eh, you know what, maybe giving you the reps isn't worth it. And that's true. Even, you know, there's a lot of questions about the quarterback position too. I mean, offensive line played really, really poorly, but Francois didn't play well at all. And this is the third game where Francois really didn't play well. I mean, he didn't play as well in this one as he did against Samford. So, you know, do you give one a look? Well, here's the problem. What happened last year when 12 was on the sideline because of an injury? What happened in terms of his impact on the locker room culture last year when he wasn't playing? And that was because of an injury. What happens if now you bench him? And the coaching staff, I can tell you right now, they are fully aware of that potential in all of this. And that makes this much, much harder to deal with. It's not a situation where you actually realistically expect that guy to go to the bench and take it well. Do you really want to deal with that? Or, you know, and then do you want to put Blackman out there and risk him against this when maybe he is the future for you for the next couple of years? Whew. That's tough. And then, you know, you only got one backup behind Francois. You only got one scholarship guy. Are you going to go down to him and then, you know, have to deal with all it? So the quarterback position is a much, much harder decision than I think a lot of people would appreciate if you're thinking about this from a coach's perspective. And that's even discounting that, you know, Blackman has not really been all that, you know, he struggled with his accuracy, and, you know, he has to get used to being in a new system, and his performance, his actual on-field play is not likely to be a whole lot better. It's probably going to be a little bit worse than what Francois showed because, again, he hasn't been as productive in practice. So then what? Whew. So yeah. Like I said, defense played pretty well for 2.5, 3 quarters. Then, you know, eventually it caught up with him. Offensively, I mean, there's just not a whole lot else to say. You know, maybe in terms of the running game down the line, you know, as you evaluate this, maybe you focus a little bit more even on gap blocking rather than zone blocking. They've been trying to zone, and this group just seems not to be able to do it. Maybe run a little bit more veer because, you know, you're cutting the opportunity for miscommunications. But, you know, Taggart's really never been a veer guy. But maybe you run some veer from the shotgun. This is one of the suggestions that one of the coaches, actually, who's also a former player, he was mentioning as we were conversing after the game. So, you know, maybe you go to some shotgun veer because, you know, at that point you're simplifying even that much more. And it's easier to basically get in a situation where you're running a track and blocking down rather than, you know, doing the stuff with zone. But then you're potentially, you know, impacting what you're trying to install for the future. And that's the tough balance when you're dealing with the first year. So, you know, this is not going to be a quick fix. And no, you know, just saying, what about, there's so many 4 and 5 stars. How can you lose with all those 4 and 5 stars? It's inexcusable. But you know who looked the worst among the offensive linemen in this game? The high 4-star left tackle. Of the guys out there, he was the guy that was the most highly rated coming out of high school. And he looked the worst. And his backup, who is also a 4-star left tackle prospect coming out, looked even worse than he did. The two highest rated recruits on the offensive line are the ones that look the worst. So at a certain point, it's not about what you were rated or what you're projected to be coming out of high school. You have to actually do what you're supposed to do at that point. Now, I do before I go, and there's a couple other things before I go that I want to mention. But I do also, this is of course a situation where I want to thank the show sponsors, Luis Marquez of Keller Williams in Jacksonville, Garage Makeovers in South Florida, and then of course Resolution Home Loans. All that information in the show notes. Just wow, I am not looking forward to breaking down this film. I'm gonna do it on most likely on Wednesday of this week, but this is going to be no fun. It's a whole lot less fun to break down this kind of stuff. It's just really bad. I mean, again, now the bright side is that Florida is actually probably in worse shape, but you know, this was 2006 Wake Forest ugly. If I had gone outside and decided to watch this while sitting in the tropical storm rain out in my yard, this would have basically been the equivalent of Wake Forest in 2006. And you know, I had somebody else who texted me that, you know, this looked like a Randy Shannon coached Miami team, and hard to argue with that. Although honestly, this was worse. And you know, this is, again, I don't want to blame this on the current staff in the way that, you know, those Shannon teams, that was all on Shannon. He took over a winner effectively, and things just went downhill ultimately. This is a situation where this team was 5-6 at one point last year, and that's what they're playing like now. So, you know, you can't really blame the current staff for that situation, but they're going to have to find answers so that they don't end the 41-year winning season streak, but I'm not sure that I see 5 more wins on the schedule, to be honest. They're going to have to get some things fixed, and they're going to have to find ways to get these kids to buy in. But it's not going to be real good from here. And again, you know, Kirby Smart had similar struggles in a first year at Georgia. You know, and that involved a lot less in terms of transition, in terms of scheme transition and all that. So, you know, this is a lot of times what you're going to have to deal with when there's a coaching shift, but you know, this is worse than expected. And actually a couple others to think about. Chip Kelly started 0-2 at UCLA, widely thought to be a great coach. Kevin Sumlin's 0-2 at Arizona. Scott Frost is 0-2 at Nebraska. So, you know, this is a lot of times what happens when you have those transitions, but I know I didn't expect Florida State to start out with a 54-0, or I mean a 54-10, a 44-point differential in their first two games against FBS competition in 2018. But that is where they find themselves, and they're going to have to find ways to move forward. I do think, like I said, that this is a good coaching staff. They're going to find some answers down the line, but this is not going to be easy moving forward. Want to once again thank my Patreon sponsors. Next episode, I'm going to go ahead and start reading off those above, those at the higher levels. The thanks for specific names, but once again, want to remind everybody that I've started that Patreon account for supporters of this podcast, and going to go ahead and get back to those film review sessions. Once again, doing that this week for those who are Patreon sponsors. And that'll do it for us. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much, and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.